Welcome to The Dreaming. I'm Sasha Smulders.
I'm Joe Foljam. This is The Sandman, Issue 44, Brief Lives, Chapter 4. So we have a lovely cover on this one.
Yeah. We've got the Corinthian here, I'm pretty sure, because he's got teeth where his eye should be.
Yeah.
But he also kind of looks like he's being dissected the way that the orangutan was.
Yeah.
That's how you say that word. Orangutan.
Is it? Or it's not orangutan?
No, it's definitely not orangutan.
Oh, you're right.
It's orangutan.
I grew up thinking orangutan.
That's the only reason I know is because like I had it corrected because
yeah.
I want to say orangutan.
Yeah, I do too, but you're right. It's orangutan.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to what that means once we get there. This cover is acrylics and color xeroxography. So basically, it's color photocopies. We have what looks like some pretty cool old school medical drawings in the background.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a science-y cover, at least the science from the scene that we see inside.
Twinkle's a nice word. So's viridian.
The perils of hunting in bed? Does yours say the perils of hunting in bed?
It does.
Because on the inside, I'm pretty sure it was the perils of smoking in bed.
Yeah.
Huh.
A treatise on optics.
Departed secrets.
A bear and his shadow.
The other side of the sky. Well, let's get in. The long day in the Northlands. The sun has not set for over a month. So, as I think everybody should be aware, the earth is tilted. And up in the north, and also I believe in the south, the sun actually doesn't set during part of the year. And then during another part of the year, the sun is basically gone the entire time.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on here, the midnight sun.
That's what that movie 30 Days of Night is about.
That's right, yeah.
A whole month in an Alaskan town where there's no sun, and so these vampires come out and they just like destroy this small village.
Yeah, because they have their one big weakness is completely gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is the opposite.
This is the opposite. I wonder if those vampires, do they head down to the south during the other part of the year?
I don't know.
Lots of flying.
I think vampires mostly hibernate during the summer. It's probably not a very good time for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so they do their they do months long sleeping.
Well, I think what they do is they go on binge killing during the time of year where they can be out more in the winter. There's more like erratic behavior, more binge killing.
Right.
But what they do, what most people do in the winter, but they do it in the summer where you like find a sweetie and you kind of snuggle up at home. So they just kind of, they romance some familiars for themselves during, what are they called? What are they called for vampires? Thralls.
Thralls, yeah.
So they romance up a bunch of thralls to keep in their home, and they stay locked up in their home over the summer with their thralls and not killing them, just drinking from them to stay alive. That's what they do. It's just like regular romances.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the other side of the sky, the lights of the Borealis flicker and explode and swirl in surges of plasma, of retinal purple, firework yellow, VDU green. Retinal purple is rhodopsin. That's the eye pigment that is sensitive to light and dark found in the rods of the eye.
Oh.
So that's the thing that picks up, that gives you night vision.
Yeah.
But when it's exposed to actual light, it gets destroyed. So it can take 30 minutes or so for your eye to rebuild it. So that's why you get night vision after being in the dark for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
VDU green, meaning video display unit. So the old video displays of old one color computers that were just this super bright green. Yeah, the Matrix. The Matrix is VDU green. If you look at the Matrix falling of code.
Oh yeah.
That's VDU green.
Okay.
My friends' first computers, I couldn't afford one at the time, but they all had the green monitors like that, the Apple IIs and Apple IIes that we used in school.
Cool.
Yeah.
Huh.
Kinda cool. There were no colors though. We were really impressed when you could get 16 colors on a screen.
Oh, boy.
I know.
We meet the Alderman.
Yeah.
And he is not super pleased with the fact that there are northern lights during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
The lights he's seen are supposed to be something that he would see in the winter, this particular display from them.
I'm not sure if that's true because so we live in Canada. But I haven't seen the Northern Lights all that often.
Because we're not in the northern part of Canada.
Well, but they do reach down to the south fairly often. And you would think that living here, you would see it a little more than I can. I have basically one really good memory of seeing the Northern Lights, but it was a fantastic night. We were out filming. A friend of mine had raised up some money. He wanted to do this short film called Blood Feud, I believe. It was not good. He's a big Quentin Tarantino fan, and he just wanted to do a big, everybody tries to get a thing and then shoots each other at the end.
I mean, if your friend is listening to this, it was great. It was very good, but...
No, it didn't end up being very good. I mean, well, for a bunch of college students back in the 90s, sure, it was fine. He was phoning around to try and get some locations to shoot on, and there was this really great barn in Chilliwack that he just wanted to do the shot in it because it was this old dilapidated barn out in this big field, and he thought it was really cool and we could just film there. So he finally found the person who owned it and contacted them over the phone and said, hey, so I'm just a student. I want to do this. I don't have any money, but can we film our scene out there? We'll just be there for like an evening or something like that. And the guy said, oh, film there. You can burn it down for all I care. And my friend went, really? We can burn it down? So he contacted the city and said, hey, I want to film this movie. And this guy said I can burn down his barn if that's okay. Well, what's involved in that? And they said, oh, you're going to have to get an okay from the mayor and all this other stuff. And he said, oh, well, we're filming in 2 weeks. Can we get that done? And they said, no, it would take too long. And I think he basically acted like he was a big shot movie guy, and they ended up fast tracking it and got the fire department on board. So we shot this scene where he's playing the main character. He's playing the main character. He has this big gunfight and he kills everybody. And he's all bloodied and beaten because you have to do that with your hero. And then just out of nowhere, he kind of grabs this can of gasoline and starts pouring it all over the barn where they had the gunfight. And then he walks away and throws a lighter on it, and it all burns. So it's obviously not gasoline that he's doing, but they film that scene. And then the fire department's all there while we're doing this. And there's like 30 of us there to help him do this. And they actually set the barn on fire in this field. And as he sets the barn on fire, it's about 11 o'clock at night at this time. The sky erupts in this green, beautiful aurora borealis, just fantastic display. It was like streaking across the sky. So we're standing 30 feet from this now inferno of a barn. And that's when I learned just how hot building burnings get, because at one point we all turned and had to run because it just got hotter and hotter and hotter. And we're like, wow, now it's nice and warm. Now it's too hot. Wow, it's okay. Wow, that's uncomfortable. And we eventually just had to run away from it just to escape the heat radiating from this burning barn. And in the meantime, so there's this orange burning barn and this beautiful green display up in the sky. Wow. It was really, really fantastic. Much better than that movie was. And I'll say it, I was not good in it. I got to play a bodyguard and I was terrible. It was bad. What are you going to do? It's low budget Tarantino wannabes.
Yeah.
without the in-depth knowledge of those kind of movies that he has. Yeah. So anyway, that was in the summer.
So they do happen in the summer.
So I just looked this up. In the northern regions like the Yukon, the best time to view the aurora is from late August to mid-April.
Yeah.
During the summer months, the night skies are not dark enough to see the aurora borealis, even at times when the solar wind activity is strong. Oh, so that's what he's saying. Because it's daylight, he should. So there would be an aurora borealis going on, but because the sky is not dark, you shouldn't be able to see it.
Yeah.
So the alderman is like, whoa, why can I see this even though there's a midnight sun?
Yeah.
So that, okay, that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I'd completely forgotten that it was like light out.
Well, the sun, the sky is almost kind of gray at that time.
Yeah. Because
the sun's not fully up.
Yeah.
It's just skirting the horizon.
Yeah. But there it is. I've never seen it during the day, that's for sure. Not even a hint.
Now, the Lapps believe. Yeah. What are the Lapps? Who are the Lapps?
Lapps is a potentially offensive descriptor for the Sami people, who are the indigenous people of northern Scandinavian areas.
Okay.
I don't want to be offensive in this way, but they're kind of the Inuit of that area, right?
People live, who lived northern in tribes in that area.
Yeah, and information about them goes back as far as the first century BC, or first century AD.
Okay.
So they've been there for a long time. They follow the animals around, all that kind of stuff, just like you would expect of the North American Inuit people. Lap is, to some of them, an offensive word, though many have accepted the phrase Lapland for the area that they live in.
Okay.
There's a whole Wikipedia article. I will post it up in the show notes at thedreaming.motivedust.com if you'd like to read more about the Sami people. It's kind of interesting because I didn't even realize that they were there. This was a thing.
What's the potentially non-offensive word for those people?
Sami.
Sami.
S-A-M-I.
Sami. Oh, cool. Yep.
Here's the right out of Wikipedia. They are an indigenous Finno-Ugric people inhabiting the Arctic area of Sápmi, which today encompasses parts of far northern Norway, Sweden, Finland, and the Kola Peninsula of Russia. They are the only indigenous people of Scandinavia recognized and protected under the International Conventions of Indigenous People and are hence the northernmost indigenous people of Europe.
Okay.
Their lands are not very well defined. They have their own language. And it's classified as a branch of the Uralic language family.
Neat.
Yeah. It's an interesting article. There's a lot of really interesting information here. They follow reindeer around. There's some really cool old photos, a colorized one of a family in Norway around 1900. Really interesting article. I'm not going to go into all of this information, partly because I haven't even read it myself. But I love just checking out Wikipedia articles and things I didn't know about. So again, that link will go up in the show notes.
It's like the whole reason you do podcasts.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
This is how I learn things.
Yeah.
Oh, let me look up this tiny little reference. Oh, boom, information.
I've fallen down a Wikipedia hole.
That's right. I love it. I would live in a Wikipedia hole if I could. Just doesn't pay the rent. Lieb Olmai, the name he has, is actually Sami for alderman.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. And he's a mythical bear man or bear god. He protects the bear, a holy animal, and provides good luck to hunters that honored him. If the hunters snub him, they would often lose their prey. And occasionally, Lieb might help a bear if it were to attack the hunters. The Sandman annotations notes that he's a bit of a male chauvinist. Sami women were not allowed to walk around a tent where hunting equipment is kept.
Yeah.
Because of him.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he sets these death traps.
Yeah.
And at first I thought they were like a trap to catch an animal of some kind. But instead, what happens is if the trap has been broken in a way, he knows a death is coming.
Yeah. Neil made these up basically based on dream catchers.
Yeah.
But instead of a dream catcher, it's a death catcher.
Yeah. Well, dream catchers aren't North American. They're North American. They're not European.
Yeah, dream catchers originated with the Ojibwe people.
Yeah.
And then they gradually adopted by some neighboring nations through intermarriage and trade.
Yeah, but they're North American.
Mm-hmm. But this was the death catcher is Neil making his own thing.
Okay, so he invented that. That's cool.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, what happens next where he takes off all his clothes, puts them in a heap, and pisses around them in a wide circle until they turn to stone is from Petronius's The Satyricon.
Okay.
I've got the text out of that. It's the tale of Perseus and things like that. We got among the tombstones. My man went aside to look at the epitaphs. I sat down with my heart full of song and began to count the graves. Then when I looked round at my friend, he stripped himself and put all his clothes by the roadside. My heart was in my mouth, but I stood like a dead man. He made a ring of water around his clothes and suddenly turned into a wolf. Please do not think I am joking. I would not lie about this for any fortune in the world. But as I was saying, after he had turned into a wolf, he began to howl and ran off into the woods. At first, I hardly knew where I was. Then I went to take up his clothes, but they had all turned into stone.
Hmm.
And the biting off your shadow that happens, that's Neil taking that basically directly from Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, this is wonderfully familiar yet new at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting kind of fusion of all these things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so he bites off his shadow.
Mm-hmm.
He once again pees around the stone.
Mm-hmm.
And the shadow becomes the alderman again.
Yeah.
And as the alderman walks away, forgetting that he was the shadow, the bear forgets that he was the alderman.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the death is going to come for his shadow.
Or for the bear?
I think that becoming the bear is why he's avoiding the death that's coming.
By becoming the bear. Yeah. And
because death is coming for the alderman.
Yeah.
So he's giving that death his shadow as an alderman to die, but he has become a bear to hide out from it.
Okay.
That's what it feels like to me.
For me, it felt like I know that one of them is going to die, mm-hmm. but I just don't know which one. So he's created a copy of himself so that one dies and the other lives, but I don't know which. Because it seems like the human alderman is going to keep the memories and the human memories. And the bear has no human memories now.
Right. I feel like it's going to get undone, though, after the death.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right. The bear will eventually remember.
So again. I have no idea.
I don't know. We don't know either. That's part of the really interesting thing about this.
Oh.
Yeah. But I think because of the way it's written that it's him, right? He's the bear and he tells his shadow, be me.
Mm.
But also he says he watches his shadow limp away, already forgetting that it was his shadow, knowing only that it was the alderman. I think that means that it still is his shadow, but it thinks it's the alderman so that it's what death is going to come for.
Okay.
That's my guess.
Hmm. Meanwhile.
Meanwhile, with Delirium and Dream.
In their classic car.
Mm-hmm.
Driving around, and Delirium's wondering what Dream's looking at. He's looking for someone.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he's looking for his girlfriend who abandoned him.
Ooh.
That's what I kind of think.
Yeah, probably. Because that's what he's trying to forget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And why don't you have proper eyes instead of those things? Everyone else in the family's got proper eyes, except Destiny.
Destiny is blind. And then they arrive at K-Pax's house, and his son is there. He's just died the day before, and it's obviously showing on him the effect that this has had. He's got a 5 o'clock shadow. His hair is messy.
His eyes are bloodshot.
His eyes are bloodshot. His clothes are pretty frumpled up.
Yeah, he's wearing a suit, but it looks like he slept in it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And we learn what he felt about his dad.
He thought he was a geek.
He basically thought he was, kind of a geek or a nerd. He's kind of embarrassed by him. And he just starts talking.
He had a secret life. He had Krugerrands.
A Krugerrand is a South African gold coin weighing exactly 1 ounce of 24 karat gold. So they're worth a lot of money just in gold.
Oh, boy. So he's got a briefcase just full of them.
Yeah. From the Sandman Companion, Neil notes that Bernie K-Pax originated from an anecdote Alan Moore told me. The rather dull father of a friend of his had died, and while going through the father's things, his friend found a blank passport and a load of Krugerrands. Neil simply expanded on the anecdote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also has 2 bags of drugs.
Smack, which is slang for heroin.
Mm-hmm. And the other one is probably cocaine.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Guns and knives are in the top drawer.
Yeah. He's got all these weapons. Ugh.
Yeah.
It's weird because he seemed like such a mellow guy even for an immortal. I just assumed he just continued to have like the most mellow life.
Right.
But it appears it was not so mellow.
Well, I guess, remember he was very, very worried about not dying.
Yeah.
Like that he it seemed that he could die. He just was immortal. He didn't age.
Yeah.
And so this is what it's like when you make sure that you can't die. You always have escape routes. You have weapons to defend yourself with.
And you have things that you can sell that aren't just money because governments collapse and stuff.
Yeah.
So he's got the Krugers, which is gold that he can. Mm-hmm. And then he's got drugs. You can always sell drugs.
Mm-hmm.
When money isn't worth nothing, you can sell drugs to get by.
Yeah, yeah. This is his make sure I live fund, I think.
Yeah. Interesting. Now, I wonder how many families he's had in the past then.
Yeah.
Because, like, what happens? How does he...
How many K-Paxes are there in the world?
And how does he not have his family realize that he's not aging?
I don't know. We're going to have to get a K-Pax story.
So weird.
Yeah.
I guess, like, to a certain degree, if his son is only 20, his son's in college,
mm-hmm.
I think we have this kind of thing where we just sort of believe that people are changing, even if they aren't. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, the idea that he's not aging would be so obscenely weird to his family that they just wouldn't notice that he wasn't aging, maybe.
Yeah.
If he appears around 30 forever, you can always look somewhere between, you know, 30 and 50
yeah.
all the time if you kind of have this nondescript look.
In my 30s, people thought that I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
So it could be that, you know, yeah, he has that kind of middling age. And he was also balding and kind of like old-fashioned and not really fashionable, it mm-hmm. seemed. So yeah, it could just be that he looked a little older than he was at first, they thought, and now he looks younger than he is for a while.
Yeah.
And he probably took off a lot.
Yeah.
My guess is his son's now, you know, grown up, so he would eventually just bug off somewhere else, start over again with his Krugerrands and his smack.
Yeah.
Get a lawyer job somewhere else.
Yeah, because you can only go for so long before, okay, you're supposed to look older. What's happening?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
And Delirium gets a bubble blower.
I love those. I sometimes bring them with me places. I have one I keep in my purse when I go out sometimes. It makes pictures better. If someone's like snapping casual pictures of you, you just pull out and blow a couple bubbles and there's bubbles in the picture.
Okay.
Yeah, it's great.
We also find out why he's so worn down. He's been drinking since before breakfast.
Yeah. Breakfast of champions.
Yeah. Everybody deals with pain in their own way, I guess. But even though he's normally a one beer guy.
Now, here's another little... So I'm starting to suspect that Destruction is the one killing off these friends or something related to Destruction. Because even the way he says how his dad died, there was demolition work going on and bam, bye-bye daddy, whoever you were. And it's that he said the word demolition that like feels like destruction and it was the other building blew up. As well. So yeah, like if these aren't these characters that are dying off, they're not doing it in ways like they accidentally get poisoned, they accidentally fall down a flight of stairs. It's catastrophic. Mm-hmm. A building is destroyed each time someone is killed in this.
Yeah. And we know Destruction doesn't want to be found.
Yeah.
So yeah. And we get a little kid's picture of K-Pax. My dad is a lawyer, and he looks exactly like he looked when he died.
Mm-hmm.
He's even got the little ponytail.
And the little mustache.
Yeah. So his style hasn't changed very often. Because that was obviously when his 20-year-old son was, what, 5?
Yeah.
Although it does look kind of like what my drawing would look like if I were to draw somebody today. So maybe his... Maybe he drew it and he's just not very talented like me.
I want to say that that's not true, but I have played Drawful with you, so.
Yeah, I'm a designer, not an artist. I would lay out the picture of his dad nicely, pick a good font for it, especially if I had computers. But no, I need other people to draw for me.
We get a nice scene in the car between Ruby, the driver, and our two Endless. And she's asking, how is the lawyer?
Dead.
Ha, cute. That's the joke, isn't it? What have you got if you've got a dozen lawyers buried up to their necks in cat shit? Not enough cat shit. Ta-da! Enough with the jokes. How is he really?
Really dead.
I love that.
Yeah. I like Dream's response to the question. Of, hey, you said destiny was blind. Didn't you mean love? It's love that's blind. That's the saying, isn't it? The subject is one I find entirely lacking in interest. Like, just don't talk to me about that. I don't want to discuss my family.
Yeah, he doesn't want to talk about whether or not love is blind.
Well, he knows it, right? He doesn't want to have to explain it to a mortal.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, I'm literally talking about my brother Destiny. He can't see. Therefore, he is blind.
Yep.
And the only thing close to love in this would be desire.
Uh-huh.
And desire sees lots of things.
Ruby insists that they have to go to a motel because she needs to sleep, even if they don't.
Yeah.
And she basically threatens to quit if they're not going to stop and rest. And Dream knows people need to rest. What's wrong with him?
He knows that sleep is required.
Yeah.
Yeah. Delirium was saying, what are you looking at? Like, he was basically using his kind of dreamy awareness to go look at other people and look for things.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of spacing out. I think he's kind of spacing out here as well. Because again, as we find out, we know from the beginning, and we find out later when he talks to Lucien, he's not really looking for his brother.
No.
He's just out and about, just traveling to try and get his mind off things. But he can't get his mind off things, so he's not exactly thinking right. And she asks Delirium, what do you think, lady, huh?
I think you're very nice. I think twinkle's a nice word. So is Viridian. I met a lady once who had an imaginary fish. That's all the things she's thinking.
Okay, let me put it this way. We stop somewhere for the night, or I stop the car here and I quit. And you can drive all night to Ohio or Anchorage or Timbuktu if you want to, without me. And Dream's like, meh. He's so emo. I don't care. It makes little difference to me.
At the hotel, there's this great scene where Ruby's giving them the keys. And Dream just doesn't take the key. He walks into his room.
Yeah.
And Delirium says, I don't think he likes keys anymore.
A reference to Season of Mists. He doesn't want to take a key from somebody.
For sure. Delirium takes the keys. She knows what to do with them. She's not stupid or anything. Mm-hmm. And she goes and she's standing in front of her room and she pulls the key card. And then suddenly it's looks like a conventional key.
Yeah.
She goes in like, I know how to use keys. I can just open the door no matter what.
Yeah. But there's no keyhole. So yeah. She turns it into a key and then she opens the door.
Yeah.
And then she blows bubbles and they become delirium bubbles. Now, do you see the one up in the top left to the right of the fork?
Oh, there's my neighbor Totoro.
Yeah, Totoro.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, Totoro with his umbrella. I don't really recognize anything else specifically. I mean, there's a cat and an alarm clock and a cross
mushroom.
And a mushroom and a heart.
There's an alien thing. It's got two googly eyes and a mouth.
Where's that?
Right above the text square.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, with eyes on stalks. Yeah.
It's a cat and macaroni. Ice cream cone.
Yeah. So just a bunch of random delirium stuff.
Yeah.
Ooh, and I can see it. Just in the top right, to the right of the three panels is a skull. It's just in that little bit between the top right panel. Yeah. And then we learn some more about Ruby.
Yeah, so this is really fascinating, her story. She's essentially like a hyper-competent, she's kind of like your super spy
kind
of stuff. She speaks 11 languages. She's an expert in unarmed and armed combat. She can play the cello. Mm-hmm. You know, she's got all of this stuff about her. But she's also a Catholic. She's a virgin. She's almost 30 and she's still a virgin and she's waiting for a white wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And she says here that she did like this one guy, but he failed a routine credit check. As in, it's routine for her to check the credit of anyone that she finds attractive.
Yeah, because she wants to be rich.
She wants to be rich. And what I find really funny about that is she says it's destiny. It's not destiny. It's love. That she was right, that love is blind. Except for her, love isn't blind.
Yeah.
Even when she did love someone, she abandoned him because he failed a credit check.
Yeah,
so her love isn't blind.
She looked into him.
Yeah.
And said, nah.
Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Like, if you decide that you want your partner to be a certain way, you get to do that. And you live the consequence of maybe not finding your partner for a long time. But she, I guess, never does find him.
Mm-hmm.
I love that she thinks love is blind and yet she actively is a contradiction to that.
Yeah. And then she smokes in bed.
PSA. Smoking is bad for you, but also smoking in bed is extra bad for you.
Yeah. Really, really bad. Don't do it.
She's got to give it up. She really must. These things are going to kill her.
It's not destiny. It's love. It's not love. It's desire. She desires money.
Mm.
And she smokes, which is also a thing that desire does.
Mm.
Not all desires for other people. And then we get back to Delirium, who looks at her list and then lets herself go. She's basically using her delirium powers, I guess, to reach out. She's doing what I guess Dream was doing when he was spacing out. She looks for K-Pax. He is dead. There's no doubt of that. There's nothing in his space but darkness and cold and silence. Etain of the second look. Things moving fast, strange impressions, difficult to locate. No longer where she was. Is she even in this plane? Refuge. She's taken refuge somewhere.
She sees the Alderman.
Mm-hmm.
An impression of cold and something insubstantial, hard to touch, and it's gone.
A shadow, maybe?
Mmm. And the dancing woman. And that's who she's able to make contact with.
And the reason she's able to make contact with her is because somebody near her is kind of in a state of delirium.
Exactly.
Tiffany.
So it appears they're at a strip club.
Yeah.
They're dancers at a strip club. And Tiffany is extremely ill. She says she has the flu, but she's probably been drinking.
Hmm.
And Ishtar is just taking care of her.
So these could be their stage names, but Ishtar is an ancient goddess.
Yes. And something I didn't notice until my second read through is when Ishtar's helping Tiffany throw up in the sink, mm-hmm. then Tiffany looks at her through the mirror and her speech loses those little bubbles mm-hmm. and instead shows up just like delirium speech, but not colored.
Right. Yeah.
As she looks at her through the mirror. You're the dancing lady, aren't you? You're really pretty.
Huh? Tiffany?
We'll see you soon.
So yeah, delirium gets into the head and sees through the eyes of somebody who is delirious.
Yeah. And this next shot of her, it looks like something's leaking out of her mouth, like she's also throwing up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's really contacted her. And we see that Dream is doing the same kind of thing, reaching out, doing some investigating.
Yeah, he's standing in the middle of his hotel room and then simultaneously standing in the library of the Dreaming.
And he meets up with Lucien. And he, like you, says, I think something is trying to stop us.
Yeah, it's a little too much of a coincidence.
Yeah, so if this is the case, I would know who, and I will know why. I'll put something onto it immediately, Lord. Something, not someone.
I'm also going to point out, I particularly love his outfit at this point.
Yeah?
Like...
Oh, Dreams?
Dreams, yeah. Yeah. That, like, extra collar over the top of his long cloak is just, it's super cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would. This would be a pretty cool Dream cosplay
for sure.
Although I still love when he's got the flames on the bottom of his cloak. As Hot Topic as it is, I love it when he's got the flames. But yeah, this is great too.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the what's the bottom of the coat that he's wearing there? It's got the angled bottom instead of just a flat bottom. I don't know what to call that, or it's a vest maybe.
Oh,
do you see it?
Yeah, yeah. He's wearing a waistcoat, I think, underneath his. Okay. Underneath his cloak.
Yeah. I just, it's a cool shape there. And then he remembers probably the last time he saw his brother.
Because he says, in retrospect, I suspect he told me that was what he intended to do, mm-hmm. but I did not listen, Lucien, nor did I hear. And so he's thinking back on when he should have gotten the clues from destruction of what was going to come.
And we go back to, now going through all of the things that get mentioned here, this is probably around 1700.
Yeah.
There's a few clues. I'll mention them as we get to them. And it's Dream walking the waking world with the Corinthian.
Yeah, what a great person to bring along with you. Gosh. Yeah.
Well, a nightmare. This is before the Corinthian went bad, though.
I mean, I think he's always bad.
He's a nightmare. He's supposed to be bad.
He's not disobedient to his master.
Right. Here he's obedient. Yeah, for sure. or at least relatively obedient, we find. We get the hint of him doing something on his own. This is also, I'll note, this is old Dream. This is pre being held in the prison for 70 some odd years.
Yeah.
And it's gives less of a crap about mortals Dream.
Yeah, because while he's having this conversation with his brother, his ruby gets stolen from him by a pickpocket.
Yeah.
And he catches him. And the pickpocket's like, oh God, I kind of want to try to do an accent for this.
Sure.
Let me go, you rogue. I shall have you in the pillory for this, where rotten eggs are plenty.
Sir, you have something of mine.
Something of yours? You're a lying corpse white ninny hammer, a worm picker and a snail catcher. Hold your tongue, sir, or I'll wet my needle and sew your lips together. If the eyes are the windows of the soul, then your soul is black as the devil's asshole.
Enough.
I apologize for how bad that was, but also it was kind of fun.
Yeah. You are Dickon Hawksthorn.
You know me.
Aye, after my fashion. Tell me, Master Hawksthorn, was it wise to return from transportation? When they find you out, you'll swing for it.
That's a lie.
Now, transportation meaning penal transportation. So, back in the day, the penalty for most crimes was death.
Yeah.
Because they didn't really have much in the way of prisons. They kind of had them, but only if you were like really wealthy or something like that would they put you in there, worth not killing. But because they couldn't just go killing everybody who ever committed a crime, very often people were pardoned for their crimes. But then people were like, well, we can't just pardon people. And when they started having these colonies outside of England, they came up with the plan of, oh, how about we go, we'll pardon you if you agree to get shipped off to this colony and never come back.
Yeah.
But if you come back, well, you'll get your penalty of death.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened to Hawksthorn here, is he committed some kind of crime.
Yeah.
Punished, sentenced to death, and they said, well, we'll sentence you to transportation instead.
Well, because you needed, well, the English, if they were going to colonize North America, they needed people to go live there, but life was really hard. So how do you convince people? Like, you need enough people in a community to make the community work. And so how do you convince enough people to go there without, transporting criminals and people?
It is rare that I tell fortunes, but Tyburn Tree haunts your dreams, Master Hawksthorn, and it will continue so to do until you are hung there in chains without benefit of clergy. And your death shall come as a relief to you, for every night from now until then you will dance on air with a hempen rope around your neck and the jeers and catcalls of all those you have ever cared for echoing in your ears.
Here, take your damn stone, you wight. I'll have none of it. Oh, God, there's so many bad accents on one. You're welcome, listeners. You're welcome.
Now, Tyburn Tree, possibly an elm, was the site of the London gallows. And it's now known as Speaker's Corner at the northeast corner of Hyde Park.
Interesting.
That's the place where people will go and get up on the boxes and just talk about whatever they want to.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Huh.
A wight is a living being, a creature, or a man, although thanks to J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings using Barrow Wight and then Dungeons and Dragons, it's come to mean kind of an undead evil creature.
Yes.
We're not entirely sure here if Neil is referencing that kind of incorrectly, or if maybe J.R.R. Tolkien somehow got an ancient version of that word. Or there's a very interesting kind of etymology to the word wight.
Fantasy and mythology have come head to head.
Yeah. It can actually be an archaic word meaning a preternatural being, like a fairy or a witch. I do have some notes from the Salmon annotations that the first printing of this, the coloring is wrong on the Corinthian and Dream in a few panels. In a few, the Corinthian is colored white and Dream actually has flesh color.
Yeah.
Do you have that in yours?
Yeah, I think I noticed that at one point. Where did I notice that?
Yeah, the updated colorings don't have that error.
Yeah, it's in the panel where Destruction says, you could simply have taken it back from him. You did not need to do that.
Yeah.
That's where their skin tone is swapped.
If you have the older version, you'll see that. That was just an error. It's not on purpose. It's been fixed in recent releases. Yeah, we get this old, uncaring Dream response to that. I do not tell you how to conduct your affairs, brother. I must confess I see no reason for you to tell me how to conduct mine. Like, Dream is just, look, I do my job. You can't tell me what to do. I don't care about these humans. Let me do my thing. And this is where Destruction gives him the beginnings of the hint that he doesn't like what's coming up.
What was the voice we were doing for Destruction?
Oh, God, I can't remember. What did we
do? It was that guy.
Oh, Brian Blessed?
Yeah.
My affairs, yes. I've given much thought to my affairs in recent years. Times are changing, my brother.
I think you were doing Brian Blessed and I was doing Pixar Scottish.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah.
And then our two impressions will one day meet in the middle.
I would have to have my friend Eric Fell on to do a proper Brian Blessed, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eric Fell of the Gentleman Hecklers and the Critical Hit Show, by the way, who helped co-write the second episode of the new Mystery Science Theater 3000, Cry Wilderness, on Netflix right now. I'm going to give him a plug because it's great work.
Yeah.
So cool that he did that.
He's just name dropping left, right, and center.
I know. I know funny people.
Mm. And so they go to the university.
And this is what the Invisible College has become. The Invisible College has been described as a precursor group to the Royal Society of London.
Oh.
I'm not entirely sure if it was real. It's kind of been mentioned.
Okay.
I guess it wasn't official until after, which is why it's called the Invisible College.
Mm.
I couldn't find a lot of information about it. But the Royal Society is the Royal Society of Scientists and stuff that Newton was a part of, where
yes.
they finally were trying to figure out how the world works.
Reason.
Yes.
It is no more reliable a tool than instinct, myth, or dream. But it has the potential to be far more dangerous for them. They are exploring and creating, defining and dissecting.
So I see. The person dissecting here is singing Lavender's Blue. It's also called Diddle Diddle or The Country Lovers.
Mm.
It's from 1680. There's a version of it sung by Burl Ives in the 1948 Disney film So Dear to My Heart.
And great-grandfather, one great-grandmother, with words more or less like this. Lavender blue, dilly-dilly, lavender green. If I were king, dilly-dilly, I'd need a queen. Who told you so? Dilly dilly, who told you so? I told myself a dilly dilly, I told me so.
This is probably Edward Tyson, who in 1699 published a treatise on the anatomy of what he called an orang-outang. And he actually did have the G on the end. It was probably what he had, though, was a baby chimpanzee. Orang-outang actually means person of the woods.
Yeah.
In the local language. And he calls this Homo sylvestris. And Homo sylvestris also means man of the woods.
Yeah.
That's an outdated classification for the orangutan, but it's based on the Malay phrase, which is orangutan.
Hmm.
It wasn't until 1732 that taxonomy became standardized.
Ah.
Yeah.
So he's not Homo anymore, because Homo means person. And so we don't put Homo onto any of our...
So the orangutan is genus Pongo.
Yeah.
And Pongo borneo is the type species.
Yeah.
There's Pongo pygmaeus, Pongo albeli, and Pongo huigeri. The chimp had come from Angola and had died on the ship 2 months earlier in April. The skeleton actually was displayed for many years at the British Museum. It might actually still be there. I can't find it, though.
Mm.
But the body in this is very clearly an adult orangutan.
Ah.
But this was one of the earliest dissections known for modern science, where they said, let's dissect this and find out how it works. And
there's
a whole bunch of drawings about the physiognomy of this animal. Remember in issue 41, we had a flashback with Despair meeting with Destruction, and that was 1665.
Yeah.
And she remarks the last time she saw him would be 30 years on. But if we fudge that a bit, this is about 1700 or so. We're not entirely sure. Also, Neil could be mixing up some of the times a bit just to make it work better.
Mm.
But we're around 1700 here.
Dream tells our surgeon, our dissector, that he has left something in another room and he must go get it. And he uses a Jedi mind trick on him.
Yeah.
And it works.
Enough. I think perhaps you had better recollect urgent business in another room.
But forgive me, it has just swept into my mind that I need a certain volume that I must have mislaid in an adjacent room. Gentlemen, I must leave you for the nonce. Please, touch nothing. And he dashes away.
puts
his wig on and dashes away.
Yeah, and the next panel is Corinthian touching something, closing the door.
Yes, oh, Corinthian.
This is why you wish to speak to me, to show me that they are cutting up apes. That is nothing new. Do they think that they can impale the soul of it on their knives? That if they cut deep enough, they can extract its dreams, naked and writhing and screaming from its head? Reason is a flawed tool at best, my brother. And Destruction talks about the direction that science is heading.
Yeah.
Because he knows it. He's seen it before.
They've seen it on other worlds.
Mm-hmm. One of them has prismed the sun's rays into beams of discrete color. Mr. Newton, the young gentleman who ordered the rainbow, has much else to say on the subject of optics. Optics was actually one of Newton's publications from 1706.
And I believe this part of the story here is on the subject of optics. That is our title for this.
Yeah.
A treatise on optics.
Yes. Are not light and gross bodies intraconvertible? Which means, can't you turn matter into energy? He has already posed that question, although at present it is but an idle notion, and I doubt he will return to it. He has too many other things to occupy his mind. Yeah, Newton was all over the place.
Yeah.
He was just such a genius, and he just asked questions and tried to find things out, and just he was in the middle of this golden age with this brilliant mind, and he wanted to figure everything out.
Yeah.
Yeah. The relationship between matter and light, the transformation one to the other. I have been here before. After a while, certain ideas become inevitable. And while he's talking about this, the Corinthian pulls up his glasses, revealing his eye teeth. And he's got a knife in his hand.
Yeah, and earlier there's a shot of him opening the eyes of the orangutan, like examining them.
Mm-hmm.
I love how certain ideas become inevitable is this smiling shot of the Corinthian with his gnashy eyes, as in to say, like, when... So when Destruction is saying that these things are inevitable, they mean that destruction, like the base nature, which is to harm each other, I guess, is what is going to come. And at that moment, this is the Corinthian living his base nature as a monster,
an eater of eyes.
Yeah, he is going to stop and eat the eyes of this creature because he can't help it.
Mm-hmm.
It's inevitable that the Corinthian is a nightmare and he's going to do that nightmarish thing that he does. And I guess that's what humanity is going to do when we create technology.
And Dream, especially pre-capture Dream, doesn't care.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to do with dreams. So they begin to reorganize their lives on principles of reason. Well, what of it? It does not affect my domain. And it will do little to yours that will not change once more. As you say, you have been here before, in many times, in many worlds.
Eon after eon, from the dawn days when time was fresh minted, and for how much longer?
As long as they need us.
Are not light and gross bodies intraconvertible? Alas, they are, and from that follows the flames. The Big Bang. The loud explosions.
And for anybody who's not quite getting this, we're talking about nuclear bombs.
Splitting
the atom, converting matter into energy, which creates the big kaboom.
And here in this two little panels, we see a moment of Dream reaching out maybe to touch Destruction's arm.
Yeah, Destruction is very sad.
And yeah, and so Dream is like reaches out, his hand extended, but he obviously doesn't touch him. And so in this moment, if he had actually cared, if he had touched him and if he had said something to him, if he had sat and listened to him and let him talk out his worries, maybe Destruction wouldn't have disappeared, right? Yeah. Maybe if his brother had just like been less of a dramatic goth, he could have talked about their feelings. The goths talking about their feelings, actually, isn't that a thing? I don't know. Anyway, maybe this wouldn't have happened, but they get interrupted, of course.
Well, I think Dream talks about his feelings a lot.
He doesn't care about anyone
else.
He doesn't care
about others, right? The old Dream is what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're totally right.
Old Dream's like, he doesn't care. He just does his job. It's all he is. He is nothing but his job and doesn't really care about other things except, you know, himself a little. And when our dissector comes back, he notices the eyes are gone.
What happened to his eyes?
Eyes? I see no eyes.
It's because you ate them.
Yes. Aye. Then follows my time, brother, the age of fire and flame. I think what is going on here is Destruction likes humans a lot.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to be part of ending them.
Well, I guess, yeah, in all the other civilizations he's been with, this is what happens when they enter the age of reason.
Mm-hmm.
Then this happens, and he does not take pleasure in this happening.
Yeah.
Hello? Anyone in there?
And we're back to Dream standing in his room, which is now engulfed in flames.
Fire and flame. And I love it. He's just standing there thinking. He's not really paying attention. And he's completely on fire. If you look, like, the flames are licking up at the bottom of his, his cloak.
And this is kind of the opposite of what old Dream was, because he doesn't care about himself. He's in the middle of fire. Not that he would be harmed by this, but he's in the middle of fire and doesn't care. But the first thing he says after the firefighter points out the whole place is going up is, Ruby. He actually cares about the human.
Yeah.
He knows, like, old Dream very specifically was like, bah, whatever.
Yeah.
They die. And this one, I mean, he's not getting totally broken up by it, but at least he immediately thinks of another person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He interrogates the firefighter, who is like, you're going to kill me. Like, he really doesn't like it, but he still tells him anyway.
Yeah. We find out that it was smoking in bed that started it. Yep. The perils of smoking in bed.
Well, wasn't there a time there when everyone was smoking indoors a lot? So, mm-hmm. like, the shift of not smoking indoors so much, not just not smoking, but, like, having places be non-smoking inside,
yeah.
saved a ton of lives.
I'm sure.
Because, yeah, drinking and smoking and falling asleep while smoking was, like, you just killed so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't make a lot of furniture flame retardant because the chemicals needed to treat furniture, fabrics to make them flame retardant, unfortunately makes them carcinogenic.
Yeah, I do remember there's a big push by big tobacco to blame the furniture
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the cigarettes. And there was the ability to create a less dangerous cigarette, a kind of a fire-safe cigarette.
Oh.
But they didn't want to do that because that would be admitting that cigarettes were dangerous. So they actually had a big propaganda push to blame the furniture.
Yeah.
And they actually started basically bribing fire chiefs to say this and pushed it onto that. So all these chemicals got put into your furniture, which made the furniture dangerous, even not burning.
Yeah.
Congrats, Big Tobacco.
Yeah.
Don't smoke. Don't give those assholes your money.
Truth. They don't deserve it.
They don't.
Look, I hate to disturb you, and only if it's not too much trouble, but will you kindly get the hell out of here, or am I going to have to bust you in the mouth and carry you out myself?
That will not be necessary. I can find my own way out. He's saying this as around him, like fire. It must be so loud in here. And thank you. You have been most helpful. Again, old Dream would not put up with somebody talking to him that way.
This right? firefighter is the true hero in the story.
Firefighters are usually the true heroes in stories, aren't they?
They should be.
Yes. Yes.
And so we get Dream walking away from the burning building towards the car where Delirium mm-hmm. sits.
Yep. This may, of course, have been an accident. However, she was assigned to guard us and to take us from place to place, and thus we had responsibility for her. We failed her. Again, I don't think old Dream would care. Oh, mortal died? Yeah, that's what they do.
Mm.
But in this one, he was like, well, old Dream did get responsibility, so he might have cared a little. So this is both going on. Reason was never an important part of my dominion, but certain conclusions become inescapable. Do you understand what I am trying to tell you?
Ruby's dead?
Yes.
Oh. Oh, wow. That means I get to drive.
It also means another woman of color has been killed in this series.
Yep. This super... for the most part, white series.
But yeah, featuring a totally white character. Can't get any whiter than Dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's bad. It's women of color are not treated well in The Sandman.
No.
But many humans aren't. I mean, we've had lots of people die, but where's the women of color where things turn out okay?
Yeah.
Because there's several white people that happens to.
I mean... all of the immortals we've seen so far were white.
Which is a little odd.
Right? Every single immortal that the Destruction's hanging out with.
Yep.
Yep.
There we go. Chapter 4. Now, I do know that when you were reading, you accidentally read ahead.
I did accidentally read ahead. The first time I read through it, this final page and the page for the next one kind of like, I guess, stuck together under my thumb when I flipped. Mm-hmm. So I flipped a couple pages into chapter 5 and then was reading that and was like, gosh, this is a really long one.
Right.
What's happening? And then I figured it out. So I kind of know what happened. Well, maybe. I mean, I did miss the first page of it, but I know... Well, I don't want to give away for the readers if they haven't gotten it to it yet.
Yeah, so let's
So my prediction could just be a random prediction, or it could be a prediction unrelated to what I read, or I could just not predict.
Let's not do a prediction then.
No
predictions. Because you have foresight, and we have people, I think, I don't know how many, but we might have some people who have not read ahead, and so we don't want to give them any hints. I think it's fairly obvious that they're going to continue looking for people, and the dancing woman is one that Delirium located.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fairly obvious we're gonna see the dancing woman, who is probably Ishtar.
Mm-hmm.
Ishtar being an ancient Babylonian goddess.
Yeah, if we know one thing about immortals is that for some reason they don't think to change their names.
Or that's her stage name.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess we're gonna have to find out next episode. You've been dreaming of The Sandman, Issue 44, Brief Lives, Chapter 4. For show notes, visit thedreaming.motivedust.com. Support future episodes at patreon.com/thedreaming, and we'd sure appreciate it if you'd tell your friends about us. Our theme music is Onerai by Kai Engel. Hear more at kaiengel.bandcamp.com. The Dreaming was recorded in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada, on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Kikate, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. I'm Joe Foljam. Thanks for listening. Time to wake up.